Yeah, so today I will talk about more recent, interesting, and exciting development that is called quantum task in holography, holographic task. And yeah, this is based on interesting development by Alex May from 3 years ago. Now, so it's related to the causality of the space-time arising in ADS-CFT correspondence. But imagine that we have ADS-CFT in 2+1 dimension. So our space-time is a hyperbolic cylinder. That's your system is a 1+1 dimensional boundary, 2+1 dimensional bulk. And time flows upward. Okay. Now, of course, this bulk physics have a boundary realizations. But here we think of the ADS-CFT correspondence says that anything happening on the bulk is encoded on the boundary. And what's happening on the boundary have some geometric realization on the bulk. Okay, so let's study one very simple task that is a simple procedure. That is, we start from one of the end of the boundary, like this, okay? And you start from here, and then there is no black hole. So even if you jump into the black hole, the bulk, you don't die. You just safely travel. Eventually, you can exit. Output location, it's in the opposite of the system. So you can send a signal from here to here by shooting a laser light, for instance, through the bulk. But from the perspective of the boundary, this would look like this. So it's 2 pi, these are the angles, this is the angle. Right, so then, so in order for this to make sense, you start from angle 0, that's your input point, and then your output point is here, okay? So the fact that the bulk, in the bulk, you can send a signal from one point to the other point means that there should be a way to send a signal in the quantum mechanics from this region to this region. So this is like an interesting check of the, whether these two physics really matches. Okay. Now, if we believe in ADS-CFT correspondence, these two time scale reaching from here to here and reaching from here to here should match. Otherwise, one of the theories should be probably non-local. So these two timescales should match. And this is indeed the case in this setup. And here we can normalize the time and the length and so on so that this is pi, so that a light ray propagate at the 45-degree angle. It turns out that the time you need, measuring the time from the clock of the asymptotic boundary, time you need from here to here is essentially same as time you need to go outside the boundary. Okay, so that's, I think, the easiest check of the ADS-CFT correspondence. That's good. Okay, but so this physics is too simple. So now next, let's think about some scattering process. That is, you have two input. Maybe there are qubits here, A in, A out, and there are some quantum state. Then they get together. Then they collide and they interact. then they get that away and becomes like a out, a out, the out. So this is something we always see in particle physics, like two particles collide and get them. And then this unitary process, yeah, we want to study and so on. Okay. So let's study this two particle scattering process. So how do we realize such a process in the bulk? And in the bulk, so maybe I need to draw a better diagram. One possibility is we put A in here and then B in here, then we send these two signals to the center of the bulk. Okay, then they can meet. And this slice essentially happens at the time slice, which is I over 2, because going to the center and then going to the exterior takes time pi in total, so it's pi over 2. Okay, so there is some scattering you can have at the center of the space time. You just send two particles there, and they get interacted, and then they can be scattered away. But now let's suppose that this scattering happened in the following way. So their kind of trajectory got deflected, and then this A in comes out here, and then B in comes out here. Okay, and then we can assume that this theta is equal to 0 and theta is equal to pi. And these angles can be arbitrary. So let me take probably the most exotic situation. Okay. Again, these angles can be arbitrary. For any choices of these angles, this kind of scattering can happen within the time pi. Because you can just send everything to the center of the bulk. Okay, so this is the most generic kind of a 2.2 in 2 out scattering that you can study in the bulk. Or you can just assume that you are some person and I'm here, and then we can meet in here, and then we can chat, or we can get entangled and go out again. That's the process we are looking at. So yeah, so from the bulk perspective, this is perfectly fine. This should be, of course, possible, no problem at all. But let's study this process from the boundary viewpoint. So in the boundary, draw this. Then you probably need to do where. Here's the time. Then this process should happen in the time scale of pi. But then, so let me arrange these points. A in was theta equals 0, so let me put it here. B in is here, so it's pi. And then I arranged A out and B out a little bit like a twisted way. It's in the middle. Okay, so that's like input points and output points seen from the boundary. Pi, 2 pi, and then light ray travel at 45 degree. All right. So then the question is, can we do such scattering? And then it looks like not possible. For instance, in order to do the scattering, A and B needs to meet. They can meet here, right? I mean, they could meet here because it's cylinder, so A is here, so they could meet here, but anyway, they can meet at this point. That's good, but then A out needs to scatter into, so A needs to scatter into this, it's fine, but can be in scatter into be out, then this is not possible because it's faster than the speed of light. So not it looks like not enough time to do such a scattering process in the boundary. And so schematically, the causal structure we see on the boundary looks like this. So looking at this diagram, you see that A in can send a signal to A out, right? Because in the future, the B in can send a signal to B out. A in can send a signal to B out. B in can send a signal to A out. But there is no causal path which brings A in and A, B in together and then scatter. So these two parts actually they don't collide with each other. This is a causal structure. That's available on the boundary. So this is really problematic because at this CFT correspondence, our promise is that everything happening on the bulk, like any quantum field theory happening on the this bulk of the space-time, can be described on the boundary. And such a simple process of two-to-two scattering, that's probably like related. I mean, if you have phi or theory on the bulk, then that's such an interaction. Such a process cannot be described easily on the boundary. That's pretty problematic. So this is a very interesting puzzle pointed out by Alex May. Okay, now his beautiful idea is that his beautiful idea was like maybe by using entanglement, we can resolve the puzzle. Okay, let me just try to use this. So instead, let's say we start from psi A and psi B, and then sending signals, and then essentially we can't do anything. But suppose that A and A out secretly actually share some bunch of EPR pairs. Then maybe there's something more we can do. That is, maybe A can be secretly like, collaborate together and then apply some two-qubit unitary that even couples A and B, even though they are not allowed to talk to each other directly. Okay, so the idea is maybe resolution is a entanglement, yeah. So let me first review what is currently known in the literature. First of all, as a fact, in that causal structure, A in, A out, that causal structure, if A in and B in share large amount of EPR pairs, then arbitrary U AB can be actually applied with good precision. Okay, so that's a statement. And then, yeah, I want to mention that this large number can be actually quite large. For instance, the currently best known method is due to, I think, Bayes and Koenig. That's their quantum info theorists, and they are studying this kind of causal structure for some other reason. And then their protocol, I think, utilizes the so if A in is an n qubit state, B in is an n qubit state, then their protocol requires exponentially many EPR pairs. So that's currently what's known in QI. But in principle, what this says, like, even though A and B can't directly talk to each other, there is no direct scattering process. If you use entanglement as a resource, then there is an entanglement assisted protocol to apply any unitary operator. So this, then we are not sure this number can be reduced further to smaller number. That's still an open question. But let me point out that since ADS-CFT correspondence seems to say it's possible, so it looks like maybe this number can be reduced further. But this is the most generic fact known about bulk scattering versus boundary scattering, this kind of causal structure.
But this does not give a resolution. It is in one scenario when they share a lot of entanglement. Mm-hmm. You can do this. But
Yeah. So let me proceed slowly. I said this causal structure, but actually I haven't used that fact much. So let's go slowly. So the point is that even if A and B can't bring their qubit together and then scatter, there is a way to apply unitary. And then that protocol uses entanglement. But now the question is, in this ADS-CFT setup, in this particular setup of like 0 pi, pi over 2, 3 over 2 pi, and so on, can they really utilize entanglement? And so that's the question. And also, so what I want to do is I want to do two things. First, I want to show that this kind of protocol implementing arbitrary unitary between A in and B indeed requires EPR pairs, indeed requires entanglement. And then, so that is, this thing cannot be done without entanglement. Then in order to do that, of course, we need to be able to implement arbitrary unitary, but we will focus on particular unitary operation, which is B84 task. That's like it was invented, I guess, in 1984. And it's a very old one, but there is an interesting task which can actually distinguish if A and B share the entanglement or not. And this task is a bit strange task, but there's A in and B in, okay? There's an output point. And so essentially, Alice and Bob play certain game. Then the point is that A and B are initially given certain quantum state. B is given Q, that is 0 or 1. That's just a binary information. But this information, Alice doesn't know at the beginning. And then Alice is given the following state. Your B is, again, binary bit. But this bit is applied by Hadamard operator. And just in case Hadamard is defined, is defined as I think I need a square root. Yep. And defined in this way, but the point is that H hitting 0, hitting 1 creates 0 plus 1 state. So 0 minus 1 state. So these are like X basis states instead of Z basis. So it's just change of the basis from Pauli Z to Pauli X. So the situation is that both of them are given some unknown binary numbers, B and Q. But on top of that, Alice qubit was actually applied by H to the Q. That is, if this Q is equals to 0, B, but if Q is equals to 1, it's H times B. Okay? But at this moment, Alice do not know anything about Q. And Bob doesn't know about B. Okay? But of course, Bob knows what Q is because it's classical information, so he can measure. Now, the goal of this task is at the output, so Alice and Bob are allowed to send classical signals to each other, but they are not allowed to bring their qubits together. Then the goal is they are asked to prepare B and B here and here. Okay? So that's their task. Okay? It's a bit strange task, but yeah. Kind of design task. Now, of course, if they don't do any communication at all, this is like impossible because Bob doesn't know about B, so he couldn't prepare B. Alice doesn't know Q, so yeah, he can't prepare B. But there's one thing they can do is if Bob sends the information about Q to Alice, then she knows that if Hadamard operator was applied or not. So from by using that, she should be able to reconstruct B here. But the problem is that by the time she reconstructed B, she has no time to send a signal to B because this causal path from A in to B out is allowed, but A out to B out is not allowed. So in this causal structure, the strategy of bringing Q classical information here and then processing it and sending back is not allowed. So this is a tricky task. Now let's ask like this task from the ADS-CFT correspondence perspective for now. Now this B84 task on the bulk, A in, A out, B in, B out, this should be possible, right? Because A in and B in can meet in the bulk, so they just bring these two information together and then here apply Hadamard depending on this outcome, and they prepare Q, no, sorry, B, and then copy this classical information, and then they just do the scattering. So that's really possible in the bulk. This B84 task is definitely possible on the bulk. But on the boundary causal structure, without entanglement, it looks very difficult to do that. Okay. And then another fact, so it's a mathematical fact, is that indeed this B84 is not possible. Without entanglement. More precisely, winning this task with 100% probability is not possible. There is a probabilistic way to increase the winning probability, but yeah, winning 100% is not. So the fact that this B84 seems possible on the bulk is really implying that in the boundary, there should be some secretly clever way for A in and B in to utilize some form of entanglement. Now let me argue how do this task by using entanglement and okay. So the idea is probably very simple and maybe obvious to you by now, but we use the teleportation. Okay, so let me briefly review quantum teleportation. We have an initial state, and then we have a shared EPR pair, And we make a bare measurement here and send the clash color information, outcome of the bare measurement. Then you can reconstruct this precise state on the distant place. So this your laboratory and someone else's laboratory may be very, very separated, but as long as we have access to classical information, you can reconstruct this psi. Now, Bell basis measurement happens in the following four bases. The first is the so-called EPR pair, which is actually convenient to represent as an identity operator. The reason is that another Bell basis can be constructed by applying Pauli operator to EPR pairs. This is actually right. So applying x on one of the qubit creates this one, and then other Bell basis is created by applying y. Well, up to phases. Okay, so there are four states. So this, these are the bare basis states. And we just make a measurement. Then we measure I, X, Y, Z from them. So we have information. This is classical information you get. Then the protocol is, let's call that this outcome P, some Pauli operator P. That is, we measured P state. Then what we should do is just we apply Pauli here. The reason is that, again, that tensor network-like diagram becomes very useful. if P state was measured, then it means that there's an EPR pair, but the P is applied here. Just connect, right? This is the P state, right? Projector into P state. So then if you look at this diagram, this psi travel to the future and the coming back hit by P here. So you get this P phi psi. So what you need to do is, by getting this bare measurement result, you undo this P and you have that teleportation.
Could you just go back again to the second board?
Second where?
Exactly, yeah, just the second one.
Right? Oh, that this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we start off with A and N.
Yeah.
We just chose to be at 0 and pi. The reason now on the boundary we're drawing it diagonally is just to bring them together symmetrically somehow.
Yeah, but the...
understand the angles kind of.
Yeah. So... if A in, B in comes in, and then they just scatter, and then they just keep traveling, then A in would exist at the theta equals to pi. The B in would exist at the theta equals to zero. Then there's not much problem, but we can think about process where they scatter and then go like this, diagonal direction. And then for that, this is the kind of the causal structure. And then we don't have enough time to bring two signals to the same locations and scatter.
But so when now in this case goes to A out.
Yeah. A. So if I look at this, then if you are sitting in A in, then you can shoot a laser light to A out. So you can send some classical signal to A out. You can send some classical signal. You can just send a note to A out. You can send a note to B out. But it's just you can't copy your quantum state. So, but yeah, you can send some signal.
But there's no like light construct or something on this, right? Because, I mean, it's, I mean, so, like space and time, but
right. So boundary, it's a relativistic CFD, so it has a light cone structure. In a sense, like light can travel at a 45 degree angle. So this diagonal line is allowed, vertical lines are allowed, but you can't go horizontally in time.
And does that determine whether I can send?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so send something to pi, but not beyond.
Is it a pi?
The maximum.
Yes. Right, so more precisely, so I'm drawn time and theta so that the light travels at the 45 angle. So this is allowed, but this is not allowed. And now what this means is, more precisely speaking, we look at the past light cone of A out, like this, and past light cone of B out. This is complicated, but I think I should draw a new figure, probably.
I think it still makes sense.
It's doable. So what's the region? let me write very quickly. And A out. So what is the spatial space-time location where we can send the signal to both A out and B out? That is, of course, the past of these two devices. So this purple region has access to both A out and B out. Yes? Okay. Then A in is here, so B in is here. So that's good. So A in can send a signal to both B out, A out and B out. That is good. But the problem is, what's the space-time location where A in and B in can get together? Then I need to look at the future light cone of A in and B in. And you see that the future light cone of A in and B in would be, I think something like this. They can meet here. So the point is that the point where A in and B in can meet is too future, then there's no time to rescatter to A out and B out.
I think the only reason I'm a bit confused is how we're justifying placing the interaction point at the center. Because
here?
Yeah.
Yeah, here, that likely it's
sense, I guess, that you're like just shooting.
Yeah.
It's like the theta is ill-defined.
Details? Like
theta.
Theta. Yeah, a theta is basically, this.
Yeah, but like in the center, you know?
But this space is continuous, so it's really like a cylinder. So, it's like we just start from these locations and then scatter and then, And then, of course, at the center, theta is not very well defined, but it's fine because bulk is not like something like that. Or does it matter? Because like we can, essentially this is just a circle, right? Then we can span it with r and theta very naturally.
I think the continuity point is that because you can define the theta at every other point except for the exact interaction point, then that gives you a well-defined value of theta at every vertical slice except for the one exactly in the middle in the boundary picture, and then you can define what that theta should be by continuity.
I mean, this is not that very fine-tuned, because if you don't like the very central point, then you can meet a little bit away from the center by doing pi plus theta and scale the problem is there.
I have a different objection.
Okay.
Which is that your boundary picture is very localized.
Yeah. That's
makes sense because
that's the point, right? Yeah.
Your whole argument that we've been making before is that you have this error correcting code behavior, so
yeah.
So it seems like this resolution is that you can, like, somehow your picture that you've drawn with A in and B out in the line will. It's not symmetric, right?
Okay. Yeah. So that. Okay.
Interact with both sides at the same time.
Okay. Good. So that objection is true. This is too localized. So what we could do is, B in, instead of sending a signal like this way, localized way, he could embed things into this region, and then like embedding into some nice quantum error correcting code. Still, it's not enough in a sense. Like, yeah, as I said, there's no point where A in, B in signal can meet, localized.
If you draw that both A in and B in, these delocalized regions meet directly underneath both A out and B out.
So where?
Like if you drew the same thing for A in that you just drew for B in.
Okay, so I'll do this. This is B in information this, and this is A in, right? Yeah.
And so these have met directly underneath both A out and B out.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be able to interact at both locations simultaneously and produce.
Wait, I don't understand. Like they are localized and they just met, right? So, so they could interact here.
And then from those two points, there's no issue to send signals to both A out and B.
But B in is delocalized, so you need to localize it, that information, and then so you could localize in this way, but you can't localize really in this way. Yeah.
Okay, I see.
So, I mean, I used localized picture too much, but really the essential point is that the past right cone of we usually use J minus past of A out. And the past of B out is this one, this purple on the lower. Then we also look at the future of A in, future of B in. Then, these regions is empty. That's the problem. Then that, even like delocalized strategy like quantum error correcting code is not enough.
So localization of the information is because this boundary is not physical.
Yeah. It's not. And then so even like a first strategy I drew, like sending a signal through the bulk or traveling localized on the boundary, these are actually not dual to each other, but still their time scales are exactly the same. But in general, of course, boundary time evolution quickly delocalizes the quantum information. But even if we use that delocalization property, without access to any pre-shared entanglement, this is not really possible. Yeah, then that's formally what it means is that there's this past light cone and future light cone doesn't intersect. Anyway. I don't know where I am. Okay, yeah, so.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So, in some sense, we have something classical and localized in the bulk, and we're using entanglement to sort of reproduce that on the boundary. In some sense, I'm just wondering, what if we have entanglement in the boundary? So we're like, entanglement in the bulk.
Oh, yeah.
So we're like, you could put that time scale even shorter.
Right. So.
Even harder to do it from the boundary point of
view. Okay, so this is like when we do this holographic task, whatever the task, applying unitary scattering or B84, we are assuming that bulk observers are doing like honest strategy without making any use of potentially pre-shared entanglement available in the bulk. Whereas on the boundary, we are assuming that somehow boundary people can do something very cleverly and have access to entanglement, and then we are seeing this correspondence. It's of course logically possible that in order to describe such a scattering process, it may be the case that this A-in and B-in in the bulk, they are utilizing some, let's say, bulk field entanglement. And so that's potentially possible. But we can't really rigorously rule out such a possibility. But the entanglement available on the boundary bulk field, you usually put only like massive theories on the bulk. They are short-range entangled, so they don't carry any useful entanglement much. So it's, I think it's very reasonable to think that bulk observers don't have access to entanglement. Now, it might be possible to get some entanglement, but my sense is that that kind of operation is very violent, so it will back react to geometry very significantly. And so this semi-classical scattering process even doesn't make any sense. But the point here is that A and B can be very big. It as long as they are smaller than 1 over G Newton, this makes sense, right? So then at the center of the bulk, somehow you utilize entanglement near the center of the, this, that amount of entanglement is, sounds a bit violent. But that's, of course, a logical possibility that they are allowed to use some kind of appreciated entanglement. And that's, of course, possible.
I have one more comment. So, okay, this is, I think I was actually too quick to dismiss or to object to Anna's objection. Now I think I'm agreeing more with what Anna's saying. But also, I think the thing you said answered to my question actually is what answers Anna's question properly. So that the issue is that if you look, like, that somehow if you naturally just, if you look at the picture you drew in the bulk and you project this line
mm-hmm.
to a particular value of theta, then actually the way you've drawn it, that line is at a constant value of theta. So in the bulk, it would just be a vertical, in the boundary would just be a vertical line. If you just did like a projection to the nearest point of the boundary or something.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Then you have a discontinuity between.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And it's like the fact that you've chosen this 45 degrees as opposed to this vertical thing is kind of arbitrary. And if it's arbitrary,
mm-hmm.
especially obvious at the center of the bulk.
Yeah,
is in fact, you draw this delocalized picture.
Yeah. So that actually, yeah. That question is already showing that drawing these local lines is already wrong.
Right. So mm-hmm. In fact, you do have all theta represented there, as you can see in that picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying, like, depending on from where I look at my cylinder and then project, I will get a different value.
Yeah. But that is true, but the delocalization still doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
So that's still. I think I oversimplify this. All right, so we need entanglement. Well, possibly we need entanglement. So let's just do the B84 very quickly. So this is the B8. So this is teleportation. And then how do we do that? B84. I keep forgetting how it works. I think this is the simplest way to do, but I've never studied this before. I was doing this last night. I think this works. We do the teleportation and then we send this HQB state here. And what you get is measurement result is P. Then you get P power E times HQB. But the Bob still doesn't know what he is. But then, in any cases, what Bob does is, because Bob knows Q, so he can apply HQ as well here. Okay, so he can create. Let me do step by step. Now, the interesting point is that this is a Hadamard operator, which is a Clifford operator, which changes Pauli operator to another Pauli operator. So let me call it Q. This is Q. The Q may be equals to P or not, depending on the value of a small q. But, so what it does is it may flip the B or value or not flip the B value. But it depends on P result. But in any cases, since this is now Q times B, Bob is able to make a measurement. Maybe this is B prime. And then he get B prime. And then Bob sends B prime here. Okay. So they have the result that is B prime and B prime. But the final thing they need to do is they need to check if what this Q is. But this Q you can deconstruct because you can send a signal Q and P and Q and P here. Right? So that's all the classical information. So just by sending the state by quantum teleportation to the other side and then using the fact that a Hadamard changes Pauli operator to only another Pauli operator, by just sharing the classical information, you can win this game for sure. So that's how.
Is the QB line, is that T equals pi over 2?
So up to this point, everything happens at the initial state, initial T equals 0, or like you don't need to send any signal.
Sure.
You just make a measurement, but you don't say the result until the very end. And then without even knowing what P is, Bob can do this HQ.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then he assumes that he gets some Pauli operator he still doesn't know. But then anyway, it just changes B to B prime. So as long as he can later recover Q, he can just switch it back to B. I think this is working, but I okay. But anyway.
Sorry, at which point in the picture is the classical information shared?
So yeah, that's a so let me so we never send quantum information. Right. So this segment happens without any communication at all. So you do Bell measurement, you don't tell the result yet, and then Bob does this operation, but he can do it without knowing what P is. Then once they are done with this, they send, they share the classical informations. And what Bob does is Bob send B prime and the Q. And together these B prime and Q and P that Alice already had, he can reconstruct what Q Pauli operator is. And from there, he can. And that's the same for Bob as well.
Does Bob normally not send anything?
Bob needs to send Q to Alice. Otherwise, Alice will not know what this big Q was.
Why? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's
yeah, so they need to send signals, but they don't need to do exchange, like back and forth.
How does B come to Alice?
Oh, B prime is just a classical information. So yeah, you just shout B prime result of
B prime.
All right. So I hope this convinced you that what?
Yeah, sometimes that doesn't.
Sometimes you have to like push it.
Okay.
And you should
hit the right side. Oh. Okay. Good. All right, so now finally, let me mention that there is a beautiful relation to entanglement in the ADS structure. So what I have argued so far is that in order to do this bulk scattering, we need entanglement. But boundary, does it really have entanglement? Okay. And then there is a good evidence. It's not a proof at all. And there are many open questions still. But there is a very good evidence that we have So let me shift everything by 5 or 2 because it's easier to draw. It doesn't matter, right? Okay. So if bulk has an access to EPR pairs, then that entanglement should be shared in the space-time location where they can send a signal to be A out and B out. So I want to draw a region that is past of A out and then also past of B out. Okay. And that's something, well, we have already done, but let me do that. So this is the past light cone of B out. As light cone of A out. So let me see. There's two regions. Let me call it this is left, and then this is right. So these two regions. Let's say if there is like EPR pair here and here, then potentially this EPR pair can be seen from both A out and B out. So that's potentially a useful resource. But if your EPR pair is located in this area, that's like not in the future light cone of A in, A in shouldn't be able to use such a degree of freedom. So we also need to think about the future of A, future of B. And we notice that this diamond and this diamond is the degree of freedom. That is, this A region, this diamond, A has an access, but then the A can utilize this degree of freedom and send a signal to B out, A out. Similarly, B in can have access to this and send a signal to A out and B out. So these are the important regions, this L and R. Okay. But now we studied the Liu-Takanagi formula. And then, so let's look at this partial segment. And this happens at the time pi over 4. So what is this region? Then actually, basically, we split the whole system into four regions. And this is L and R. Now, what is so special about this configuration at t equals to pi over 4 is that, well, if it's a pi over 4 plus epsilon, like very, very tiny, then these regions becomes bigger than this region. So this wedge becomes the shorter path. So there is a right at the moment where this phase transition happens. And then we know that the mutual information between these two regions is L is just the length of this guy, R is the length of this guy. So let me call it gamma 0, gamma 1. This is just gamma 0 minus gamma 1. But here, gamma 1 is shorter than gamma 0. So this is larger than 0. So it looks like this scattering process at pi over 4 was slightly larger than pi over 4. It's exactly at the moment where L and R regions start to share useful entanglement. And it seems that it's exactly at that moment this bulk scattering process becomes possible. So this is strong evidence that indeed boundary should carry some entanglement in order for this bulk scattering process to make sense. Now, there are many, many open questions right now. So first question is, of course, okay, there are entanglement between L and R, but how do we use it? Can we distill it? For instance, like we do some special operation here, here, and then we can localize EPR pair here and here. I don't know if it's possible or not. Maybe it's possible, maybe not, but that's one strategy. Or maybe we don't need to do that. We need to use EPR pair in a kind of delocalized way. That might be one possibility, but we still don't know how to do this explicit way. That's one problem. But still, this is very interesting because this simple physics, like you guys can jump into the space-time and then say hi to each other, like get entangled, interact, and so on. That's very completely normal thing, right? Like, I mean, sometimes we can apply unitary among ourselves or something. But it's very normal in this space-time. But if you see that physics from the spatial infinity in ADS, asymptotic infinity, then even like two people meeting, scattering, is requires entanglement. And otherwise, that's that kind of things is doesn't make any sense. So it seems like it's very interesting in a sense, like interactions and dynamics we see is indeed arising from entanglement. And so I think that kind of a perspective will promote this like it from qubit like picture, because so far our intuitions from it from qubit is too static, in a sense like you study entanglement and so on, but it's static or quasi-static. But this way of thinking may advance our understanding to a truly dynamic setup. But we will see how it goes. Mm-hmm.
In this case, gamma zero for pi by four, gamma zero is smaller, right?
Gamma pi over four. So it's the plus epsilon. Equal, then they are exactly the same length.
So if they're equal, then we get mutual information to be zero.
Zero, right. But then just epsilon like 0.00001, then you have. So the point is that if this time scale is pi plus epsilon, then there will be a mutual information. If it's pi minus epsilon, and pi minus epsilon, then there's no time to do the bulk scattering. Pi plus zero or pi plus epsilon, there's a time to do. Right, so that's all. Thanks.